Welcome to The Apple Seed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and on today's Apple Seed, we got a couple of stories about continuing to move forward as best you can, even when bad things happen, even though the odds are stacked against you, even when you might be afraid. And the first of these stories is a fun, spooky tale from the Dominican Republic, told for you by the terrific storyteller Carolina Quiroga. It's called Pedrito and the Laughing Skull. And in this story, the simple hero, young Pedrito, has to face a terror that has gotten the better of other folks. Pedrito doesn't have much going for him, except that when things get tough, he just keeps on going, even though he's scared. Here's Carolina with Pedrito and the Laughing Skull, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
I thought I would share with you a story. It comes from La República Dominicana, the Dominican Republic. And the one thing that you need to know about this island in the Caribbean is that its capital is Santo Domingo. What's its capital?
Santo Domingo.
Perfect. You guys are ready. This is the story of Pedrito and the Laughing Skull. A long time ago, the streets of Santo Domingo were at peace until something very unusual happened right there where the Santo Domingo convent and the church meet. On the highest part of a 7 feet tall wall, there was an empty niche, an empty hole in the wall about the size of a basketball. Now, the niche had not always been empty. Inside of it, skull had rested. Some said that it belonged to a man that changed love for a bad plan. Now, during the day, the sun ray lights touched the skull, making it look like a ghostly headstone. And at night, a lantern hanging above the niche lit up the skull every day at 6. Below the skull, there was an inscription that sounded more like a superstition. Traveler passing by, fix your eyes on me. What you are, I was once. What I am, you will be. Well, nothing happened for a long time. Neither the skull nor the inscription called any attention. Not even a fright was mentioned. Until one night, a man who excelled in stealing got a fright that changed his feelings. As the thief walks under the niche, he heard an unsettling squeaking pitch. The man stopped and slowly looked back. A laughing skull smiled back. Then the skull began to nod up and down, as if saying, I'll see you around. Oh, a cold chill went down the man's spine. He knew he was out of line. He tried to walk away, but curiosity made him stop and look back again. This time the skull was nodding side to side, left to right, as if saying, that bag, it's mine. Well, the thief dropped the bag of coins he had stolen that same day, and later he promised to embrace better ways. Oh, yes, my friends. After that, rumors spread all across town about a frightening skull that was laughing at them all. Those with remorse or guilt found a different course. Not even the innocent dared to approach it, afraid their wives will scold them. Oh, yes, many thought the skull could see through their souls, sometimes nodding up and down, as if saying, I'll see you around. Other times nodding side to side, left to right, as if saying, no one can hide. Oh, yes, brave and imprudent fellows dared to test the odds, later saying, that the skull had chattered and squeaked, oh dear. In some, those who came close ran astray like most. Now there was Pedrito. How old are you?
11.
Yeah, he was 11 years old. And although he knew about the skull, he couldn't care at all. Now, the thing is that many thought that Pedrito was a fool, and pranking him would make them look cool. So one day, a police sergeant decided to play a prank on the boy and said, Pedrito! Si te atreves a enfrentar la calavera, te daré una pelota que vuela. If you dare to face this call, I will give you a bouncing ball. The mission, as the sergeant called it, stated that Pedrito had to face the skull for a minute without flinching, crying, or blinking. Well, the very next day, Pedrito got himself a ladder, and he waited until nightfall to solve that matter. Then, that night, Pedrito walked to the street where the Santo Domingo convent and the church meet, closely followed by the sergeant and another scared soldier whose last name was Remales. That means too bad. Both men placed the ladder against the wall while Pedrito began to climb up, afraid to fall. And then the sergeant, who did not want Pedrito to bail out, shouted aloud, Pedrito! Que no te dé miedo, si no le doy la pelota a Alfredo. If you're afraid, boy, I will throw the bouncing ball away. Pedrito climbed up until the last step. Ooh, Pedrito got the goosebumps. The skull was staring at him from two empty halls. Pedrito! Again, the sergeant, who thought he could cheer up the boy, shouted aloud, Pedrito! Estoy contando el minuto. I'm counting the minute, boy. Ahora, si te atreves a tocar la calavera, quizás te dé un juguete de madera. If you dare to touch the skull, I might throw a wooden toy. Be brave, boy, and you can have it all. Pedrito stretch out his arms. But the skull jumped out of his hands, and a mouse flew in the air, quite scared. In the commotion, the skull landed in the sergeant's hands, while the flying mouse dove into the soldier's pants. Oh, both men were screaming, Ayuda, ayuda, help, help! They were running around in circles. It looked like a circus. In the confusion, the sergeant fled the scene and later promised never to play a prank that could backfire on him. As the soldier who still had a mouse in his pants, well, some say that he's the one who invented tap dance. In the meantime, Pedrito went down the ladder, not really understanding what the whole fuss was about. All this time, a mouse had made the skull his house. Duh! These grown-ups always acting like nuts. But Pedrito was sure about one thing. The next day, he was gonna have a new bouncing ball and a new toy to play. What an easy bargain he had made just by being brave. And that, my friends, it's the end.
Carolina Quiroga with her story, Pedrito and the Laughing Skull. Now, listening to this story, it reminds me of some of the funny, scary stories we used to love when we were kids. The supplier of scary stories in my neighborhood was a kid who lived next door. Gordon White was his name, and he was older than the rest of us neighborhood kids, and he'd tell us stories like the monkey's paw or the golden arm, classic old ghost stories that would make us jump or keep looking back behind us as we ran home to the safety of our houses. We loved to be scared by harmless ghost stories. We knew they weren't true, but that didn't keep our skin from getting all goose pimply as each story reached its spooky climax. Hearing those stories was among our favorite things. But then there were other stories we believed. Stories that took place not in faraway fairy tale lands, but in our neighborhood. There was a story, for example, that in the abandoned house between my house and the creek, there lived the ghost of a little 19th century girl, someone who died in the pioneering days of our little town, a little girl who would watch you through the windows of the abandoned house. Unless you looked at her, then she'd disappear. We got all spooked out every time we walked by that house. And the trouble is, it was right on the way to school. We had to walk by that house if we wanted to get to school. And we could never say to our teachers, "I didn't come to class yesterday because I was scared to walk by the abandoned house." I mean, that would never have done. So we swallowed hard every day and walked on by the house, trying to keep our eyes on it as we passed, lest we should look away and the ghost should appear. Well, my childhood friends and I still talk about that old story from time to time. Now, whether there was a ghost there or not, we learned our first lessons about keeping on going, even when you were afraid, by walking past that old house. Now, the house is long gone, but hopefully some of the courage remains. After all, while there's plenty to be afraid of in the world, you got to keep on moving through it all. And a little courage comes in handy. That's where Carolina's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
So, if you're hungry for stories, come and feed from the fruit of the tree of the apple seed.
I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life with a lot of laughs along the way. Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
It'll have us all climbing that family tree where we share together the apple seed.
What a pleasure to be with you on this episode of The Apple Seed. Next up, another story about keeping on going even through misfortunes and difficulties, even though you may be frightened. It's a story told by Ed Stuyvesant, and it's kind of a mashup between two old stories that are a lot alike. They're both stories about kings who turn away their youngest daughters because, well, it sounds weird, but it's because when the daughters say, "I love you," it's not in just the right words or the right tone that the king is looking for. And while that might never make you disown someone you love, you're not like the king in these tales. The king in these stories is kind of a rash, proud, grumpy old dude. And one of the tales that Ed weaves into his stories is an old folk tale that goes by a lot of different names. Some people call it Caporushes, and some call it Moss Gown, and some call it by another title, Like Meat Loves Salt. That's a weird title, right? And it'll get explained in the story. Now, the other story that Ed works into the tale is Shakespeare's play, King Lear. The story of the king who disowns his youngest daughter, Cordelia, in a fit of anger and gives her share of the kingdom to her prideful, devious sisters, and then loses his throne himself and dies along with just about everyone else in the play. It's a sad, sad tale, that Shakespeare play, but Ed weaves it into this old folk story using characters from Shakespeare's play to populate the old folk tale.
Ed Stuyvesant has a deep knowledge of both the Shakespeare stuff and the folktale stuff, and we think it makes this story a real delight to listen to. And what's more, it's got the folktale ending and not the Shakespeare ending, which means it's not quite as bleak as it might be. Ed calls this tale Rush Cape, and it was recorded live in the Appleseed studio. Here's Ed.
Once there was a widowed king who had three daughters. As he was getting on in years, he decided that it would be best to step down from the throne and leave the affairs and cares of state in younger and more capable hands. And so it was. After supper one night, he called his three daughters into the throne room. There on a table was a map of the entire kingdom, with lines denoting three different sections. One parcel of the country would be the most valuable, for it had the castle and the best arable lands. That portion would go to the daughter who answered a question most to his liking. So he said, "Daughters, I have decided to step down from the throne. You can see this map, the divisions of the kingdom into three, one for each of you. The one with the castle will go to the one who loves me the most." When Cordelia, the youngest, heard this, her heart quailed within her. He faced Goneril, his oldest daughter, and said, "Goneril, my eldest, how much do you love me?"
"Oh, father, I love you more than all the gold and jewels in your treasury."
"Very well spoken. I know how much you love those jewels in the treasury." "And you, Regan, how much do you love me?"
"Oh, father, I love you more than Goneril. I love you more than all the gold and jewels in all of the treasuries in all the kingdoms of the world."
"Very good, Regan. And now Cordelia, my youngest. What do you have to say for yourself?"
"Nothing, father."
"Nothing?"
"Nothing."
"Nothing will come of nothing. Speak again."
"How have my sister's husband, if they say they love you all?"
"Well then, you, being unmarried without a husband, love me best of all."
Cordelia, torn by pity for her father and anger at her sister's lies, said, "Father, I love you like bread loves salt."
"Like bread loves salt."
"Like bread loves salt."
"Like bread loves salt. What sort of treason is this?"
And then the king stepped forward, took the map of the kingdom, tore it in half, gave one half to Goneril, the other half to Regan, and said,
"I only have two faithful daughters. If this traitor is found within the bounds of this kingdom by midnight tonight, she shall be hung and her flesh left for ravens and wolves. Cordelia, I will never see your face again. Never, 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 never. Come, Regan, Goneril, we have much to discuss about the peaceful transition of power." And off they went. Cordelia, without hesitation and without any preparation, left the castle and fled across the moor.
"You better run, little princess Cordelia. You better run to save your life. Run, little Princess Cordelia, 'cause your daddy's hound's gonna be on your trail by midnight tonight. What a question you thought when he asked it. Which one of you loves me the most? Like bread loves salt was your answer, but not like butter loves toast. No, no, not like butter loves toast." And she ran towards the setting moon, towards the west. When she came to a marsh, she trudged through the marsh to confound the dogs following her scent. On the other side of the marsh, she plucked reeds and rushes and wove for herself a cape and a cap of rushes. Then she took mud and smeared it on her face to hide her beauty. And then she headed west again, just as she heard in the distance, and then the hounds. You better run, little Princess Cordelia. You better run to save your life. For your daddy's hounds are on your trail. It's past midnight tonight. She ran and she ran, and when she knew she had passed the boundaries of her father's kingdom, she ran until she came to a castle that she had never seen before. And she fell exhausted at the door of the scullery, and she slept. She was awakened by a voice.
Well, what have we got here? A little swamp being, drug from the swamp. Are you human, creature?
Born of a woman, but cast out by my father.
Well, he is a wise man to get rid of such a one as you. Oh, what brings you here to the castle of our queen and her son, the prince?
Oh, sorrow. And hunger and thirst and the need for shelter?
Well, you won't find any of that here unless you are willing to work for it.
I am not afraid of work.
Well, what kind of work do you do? Do you sew?
I wove this cape and cap.
Very well. Do you cook?
I know a good recipe for a healthy soup.
Do you bake?
I know several recipes for bread.
Do you clean? From the looks of you, say not. We don't need a cook. We don't need a baker. We don't need a weaver. We do need someone to wash the pots and pans. Do you think you can do that?
I will do whatever is necessary to make my way.
Well, then make your way toward those crusty pots and pans. There's the scrubbing brush. Take off your cape.
Oh, I'd rather leave it on.
Oh, well, suit yourself. I suppose you have done that. Suit yourself, haven't you? You sort of suited yourself. But what is your name?
I have no name now.
Well, then we will call you after your fashion. Rush Cape. Rush Cape, you can get some straw and put it in a pile and sleep on it in a corner of the scullery. Now get to work.
And Rush Cape got to work, scrubbing the pots and pans until her hands were raw. And as time went on, she became well loved by all the staff of the scullery because of her kind heart and her willingness to help anyone who needed the help. One day, the scullery was all abuzz with some news.
Oh, Rush Cape, have you heard? The queen is having balls for her son. 2 balls in a row, tonight and tomorrow night. The son is of marriageable age, and so she wants to introduce him to all of the princesses from all the realms around. And she has said that we, the scullery staff, can come after all of the dinner things have been cleared. Won't that be wonderful?
I suppose.
And after everything was cleared, the cook said, well, Rush Cape, it's time to go to the ball.
I don't think I'll go. I'm a little tired. I'll just stay here and rest.
Well, suit yourself,
as you have done. And off they all went, except for Rush Cape.
But as soon as the scullery was empty, she walked to the door, opened it, and ran down the hill to the spring. There she took off her cape and her cap. She washed her face, brushed her hair, fluffed out her princess garments, and she went to the ball.
Who goes there?
Said the guards at the gate with their halberds. But when they saw the beautiful princess' face, they pulled their halberds back. And she passed between. She went into the room, and there everyone turned and looked and saw her. The prince came down from his throne, walked over to Rush Cape, took her hand. May I have this dance?
Yes,
said Rush Cape. And they danced, and they danced, and they danced. And they danced, and they danced, and they danced through the night. And they danced, and they danced. It was love at first sight. And they danced, and they danced. And at sharp midnight, she disappeared. No one knew where she went.
Oh, Rush Cape, you should have come last night. It was wonderful. A princess from an unknown realm has come, and I think the prince is in love with her. But she disappeared at midnight. And there is another ball tonight, and perhaps she will come back. I hope so. I know the prince hopes so. Will you come?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm a little bit tired. But after they had left the scullery, She went down to the spring, washed her face, brushed her hair, fluffed out her garments, and went. The guards were ready to see her come, and there was the prince standing in the doorway with something in his hand. He took her hand and slipped a ring on her finger, and they danced, they danced, and they danced through the night. And they danced, 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 and they danced until deep midnight, and then she disappeared. Oh, Rushke, you should have seen the face of the prince when she disappeared this time. He has sent out ambassadors and heralds to find out where she went, and if she is not found, I don't know what the prince will do. He is in love. And she wasn't found, and the prince began to grow ill. Day by day, he grew paler and paler. Physicians were called, but no one could find a cause for the disease, so there was no cure. And so it was that one day the cook said, Rushcape, when I first met you, didn't you say something about knowing a recipe for a healthy soup? Now might be the time. I'll do what I can, said Rushcape, and she made her healthy soup. And when the bowl was full and hot and ready to be delivered by a maid to the prince's sick room, she took something from within her cape, a special ingredient, and plopped it in the soup. The soup was taken to the sick room, and the queen fed the soup to the prince, spoonful by spoonful by spoonful. With every spoonful, color came back to his cheeks. And when, with the final spoonful, the ring was discovered, he sat up in bed. Mother, oh, it is my ring. Whoever cooked this soup will know where my love is. Summon them. And so Rushcape was summoned, and when she appeared in the doorway, the prince recognized her, even in her cape of rushes and dirty face. He leaped from his bed, and they danced, and they danced, and they danced round the bed. And they danced, and they danced, and the prince to her said, Will you marry me? And she said, Yes. The wedding was magnificent. There was dancing, but she didn't leave after at midnight. And the prince lived happily ever after, but not Rushcape, for there was a weight on her shoulders, which no one really understood. But every day she would go to the tops of the parapets of the castle and look toward the rising sun, the direction from whence she had come. One day, her vigil was rewarded when there, on the path, casting a long shadow, was a frail old man with brambles in his hair and beard, muttering something to himself. And as he got closer, Rushcape heard him say, Never, never, never. She sent two manservants out to bring the stranger in that he might bathe and be clothed so he would be ready for dinner that night. And then Rushcape went to the scullery and spoke to the baker, handed him a recipe.
But, Your Majesty, I don't think this is going to work at all. Without that ingredient, I don't even think this bread will rise. I don't think so.
Well, do the best you can.
All right, Your Majesty, I will do the best you can.
And the bread was made and delivered to the table for dinner. The stranger was brought in, mumbling to himself, not recognizing anything around him. Seated next to Rushcape, the princess sat down, and he began to eat. He ate heartily. It looked as if he had not really eaten in some time. But when he took a morsel of the bread into his mouth, he spit it out and roared,
Are you trying to poison an old man? Are you trying to insult me with this bread? This bread has no salt!
And with that, the madman's mind cleared, and he knew who he was and what he had done, and he began to cry. Never, 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 father?
Who calls me father? Who mocks me with this name? I had three daughters once. One I banished, and two have banished me, and now I have nothing.
Nothing will come of nothing. Cordelia, is it you?
It is I.
Oh, Cordelia, can you ever forgive me?
Yes, Father, of course. Can you forgive yourself?
And the two of them embraced, and they cried, and they cried, and they cried. And then the stories began of her banishment and adventures in the scullery and the ballroom, and his adventures being banished by his daughters. And then the laughter began. They laughed, and they laughed, and they laughed through the night. They laughed, and they laughed, and they held their sides tight. Laughed, and they laughed, and they laughed, happily ever after.
That was Ed Stuyvesant with Rush Cape. Have you ever made a rash decision that put distance between you and someone you loved? Have you ever been wronged or rejected and later made peace with the person who had wronged you? What things did you do to heal the rift? Have you ever been scared but had to keep on going anyway? I bet there are stories there. We want to thank Carolina Quiroga and Ed Stuyvesant for bringing their tales to this episode. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own.
The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Our audio engineers are Ashton Parkinson and DJ Cromarty. The rest of the Appleseed team, Kira Van Dam, Kelly Wormeister, Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. Hey, if you like today's podcast, subscribe, rate us, leave us a review, and tell your friends. That's how the podcast grows. We also love to receive emails. Email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. Your thoughts and comments help us shape the future of the Appleseed. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.